Well, good morning, everyone. So nice to see everybody, and thank you for participating in our quarterly market review and economic outlook. For those of you that don't know me, and I think you should, Michael Chaika, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Malvern Capital. As always on our call today, I have my partner as well as co-founder, Jim Olson. Jim is our chief investment officer. And we have Lou Ivanoni. Lou's our executive vice president. And we have Jenny Shapiro, who is our executive vice president of operations. On today's call, we're going to be accepting questions after Jim's presentation. And so if you have a question, there's a little icon at the bottom of your screen that you can go ahead and raise your hand. And what we'll do is after the presentation, I'll go ahead and turn on your audio. But given we're going to be taking questions today and we will have audience participation, I have to read a short disclaimer. Our attorneys will appreciate this. The information presented today is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. The information expressed today does not take into consideration your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as a recommendation or appropriate for any individual or investment advice. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax or legal advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance, and this call is being recorded today and will be available on our website by the end of the week. So today's call, we're going to focus on three topics. The made-for-TV discussion, as one of my colleagues said, the debt ceiling and the perceived crisis, inflation, interest rates, and the Federal Reserve. And then, is a recession coming? Where we sit, we don't really think so. Before I turn the call over to Jim, I just want to mention a little bit about our current investment stance and take a step back on where we were back in late 2022. I personally spend a lot of time talking to clients and friends and just people in general to gauge their overall sentiment about the economy and how they feel about their jobs and their overall state of mind. Right now, the world is so negative. And it has really been since last August and September. Last September, for those of you that are clients on this call, we became less negative on the economy and the markets. And while we were a bit early, we did participate in the rally in the fourth quarter. This past January, we became more optimistic about the market. And given our client stature, what we did is we did a full rebalancing. And as you know, or most know, that the stock market is a leading indicator of about 6 months. So that puts us right 4 or 5 months into where our thought was. And the interesting thing is that what you're seeing today in the market is what I call the wall of worry. And, you know, you ask the question, well, what is the wall of worry? The wall of worry, it's a financial, where the financial markets a periodic tendency to overcome just a host of negative factors and the market keeps ascending. And as an example of that, everybody that listens to CNBC or any of these publications, or the publications that you read or the newscasts that you listen to, all of the talking heads on CNBC are still predicting that the S&P 500 or the market's going to fall 25 or 30% and hit new lows. They're also predicting that earnings are going to be slashed and slow down dramatically. They're also predicting that we're going into a deep, deep recession. They're also predicting that the Federal Reserve is going to keep hiking interest rates, and also that negative sentiment is at an all-time high right now. And so what does that really mean? That actually bodes well for Malvern Capital because I use and Jim uses sentiment as a contrarian indicator. As an independent firm, we're not beholden to deliver the company line that most large financial institutions are projecting right now. You know, again, the end of the world is coming, you know, buy gold and silver. We do our own research, we do our own investigative work, and we make all of our decisions in-house, and it's all free of bias. The other thing I'll say is that the Federal Reserve, you know, people think that politics, the Democrats, the Republicans, independents, and the president are the most powerful people as it relates to the market. That's not true. Really, the most powerful entity is the Federal Reserve. However, right now, the Federal Reserve continues to be hawkish. And what does hawkish mean? Hawkish means that it takes on a negative tone, while dovish is a positive tone. And it's really that the Federal Reserve continues to talk hawkish because they don't want to bring, or they want to bring the market down, and they really are not going to be any more positive until I think they really have their hands and can really see a good vision. But the reality of it is that we are not on the Federal Reserve or Jerome Powell's mailing list, that they're going to give us the green light that it's time to go ahead and invest in the market. We got the green light. It's all clear. That's not going to happen. And so for our purposes, we always stay fully invested. And it really just bodes well for all of our clients and for what our outlook is. So I think at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the presentation over to Jim. Jim's going to speak about three topics today that we are that I mentioned early on. And the first topic is, again, the made-for-TV drama, the debt ceiling, and the perceived crisis. In our view, you know, each side is weaponizing the debt ceiling issue. And so, Jim, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, where do you think this is going to, you know, end, and what's going to take place?
Yeah, so if Congress fails to increase or suspend the debt ceiling in time, the Treasury will likely miss an interest or principal payment and on the debt, and that would lead to default. That would cause a major market sell-off, spiking in Treasury yields, and a collapse in the dollar. We could see further downgrade of the credit rating on the U.S. Debt, which would be devastating for interest rates, and could cause a permanent increase in the default risk premium on Treasury securities. The actual date on which the government will no longer be able to pay its bills is commonly referred to as the X date. And Janet Yellen has said that that date is around June 1st. This date moves around, but it's sometime in early June. It's likely to be our drop dead X date. The Biden administration claims that it will not negotiate on raising the debt ceiling, and has urged Congress to pass a clean debt ceiling bill. Even though they say they won't negotiate, both sides are talking. They had a meeting yesterday, so they are talking. I guess they don't consider that negotiating. The Republican-led House has passed a bill recently that would raise the debt ceiling by $1.5 trillion. And the bill contains some negatives in it that are non-starters from the administration standpoint. It contains $4.8 trillion in proposed deficit reduction over the next 10 years. Included in that is cancellation of President Biden's student loan forgiveness and the repeal of most of the clean energy tax credits from the last year's Inflation Reduction Act. So clearly this is a non-starter. It's not going to pass the Senate. It's not going to get signed by the president. So what is likely going to happen? What's likely not going to happen? Let's start with that. First, there's no way to balance the budget to avoid the debt from rising. So there, basically, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, estimates that the current fiscal year spending is $6.2 trillion with revenue of $4.8 trillion with a budget deficit of $1.4 trillion. So there's no way they're going to balance the budget. It's just out of question. So that's not going to happen. Second, last minute prioritization is not practical. What prioritization means is you pay off your debts first and all other bills of the government secondarily. This will run into issues with entitlement payments, and this is likely not going to happen either, because debts, the Social Security payments, veterans payments, things like that are not debts. They're bills that the government pays every month, and that's not gonna happen. So the third thing that's likely not to happen, you've probably been hearing this in the press lately, it's called the 14th Amendment option. This is fraught with peril. Basically, what this is, and I'll just read a little clip. Section 4 of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution declares that the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned. What legal scholars say is that this gives the president the ability to ignore the debt ceiling altogether. Problem with this is it hasn't been challenged by the Supreme Court in the Supreme Court, and it likely would be. And if the president relies on the 14th Amendment and it goes to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says it's not valid, that would mean an immediate default. So I don't think they're going to risk that happening. So that's not likely to happen. So it's clear that the only eventual end to this crisis is a bipartisan bill passing Congress to raise, suspend, or eliminate the debt ceiling. That's about the only thing that could really happen at this point. All of this is gonna require significant compromise. The Republicans are gonna have to give a little, and the president's gonna have to give a little to get this done. But our opinion is that it is going to get done because it always does. There's a lot of drama that goes along with this, but it will get done. Nobody wants to be blamed for the U.S. defaulting, especially as we're going to be entering an election year next year. It's just that's what's going to happen. It's so we're not really worried. I think the market really isn't worried either. We're seeing very little impact on day-to-day prices because of this. So I think investors, for the most part, think that it's going to be resolved as it always is. So that's where we stand on that.
Yeah, Jim, you know, historically, you know, I use the word weaponize in my first introductory statement. And I think that both sides are trying to weaponize this issue. And I guess, do you think that it'll get down, you know, to the 11th hour and even beyond that before things get done?
Yeah, I think so. It usually does, and which adds to the drama. But I still don't think the market's going to react because I think everyone expects that they'll get it done. So even if it does go to the final hour, they're going to get things done. Plus that X date kind of moves around a little bit. So we don't know exactly when things, the government actually runs out of money.
Yeah. So topic number two, the Federal Reserve. I mean, this has been on our calls for the last years, I guess, since March of 2022. Obviously the Fed has a fight right now to balance against inflation versus causing a recession. Where do you think we are right now with the Federal Reserve? And I guess really, you know, to continue to hike or not, or to continue to taper or not taper. What are your thoughts on the Federal Reserve and where we're going with all of this, you know, noise in the background?
Well, rising inflation acts almost like a tax on consumers. And the Fed, one of the mandates of the Federal Reserve, or the two mandates, are stable prices and full employment. So it has to weigh its actions against what it does to the economy. And the rate of inflation is slowing down, which is good news and indicates that the Fed's actions are working. But let me be clear, we're not experiencing deflation. We are seeing the rate of inflationary increases slow down. So prices are still going up, but we're making progress. So the Fed has a little bit of the pressure. That hawkish tone that you mentioned earlier may soon turn to dovishness, or at least the hawkishness will go away. There's less pressure on them right now because things seem to be moving in the right direction. So I think that this last increase in May, this earlier this month, 25 basis points is probably the last we're going to see for a while. Maybe the last we'll see for this whole interest rate cycle, raising cycle. So I think they've raised it 450 basis points since March of 2022. They've really slowed down the economy. They've slowed down inflation. So I think they're making progress. Last thing they want to do, especially with this banking crisis going on and the slowing economy, they don't want to push us over the edge into a recession. They don't want to make things worse with the banks, with the regional banks, and cause more problems with the banking industry. So I think we are done for now. And, you know, we should not necessarily look for decreases in interest rates, but I think we can be rest assured that they're going to stop for now.
All right, great. So, you know, this third topic, it sort of dovetails on the back end of your comments. You know, is a recession coming? And, you know, for everybody who got our notice of this call, you know, we sort of followed it up with not likely. So, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, the recession, perceived recession, deep recession? You know, talk a little bit about that.
Well, many economists and investment analysts predict an oncoming recession and a major market sell-off to follow. A recession is usually defined as two quarters of negative GDP growth, as well as a downgrade of certain economic factors as determined by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It's an independent board that is basically there to declare when we are in a recession or not. One factor out there, and there, a lot of people have been talking about, is the inverted yield curve. Inverted yield curve often signals that there's an impending recession. Since 1929, every recession was preceded by an inverted yield curve. However, every time the yield curve inverts, it hasn't necessarily led to a recession. I think we're in that point right now. So what is an inverted yield curve? So I'll define that first of all, so everyone understands. The yield curve is generally positively sloped with lower interest rates on the left-hand side of the curve and shorter term bonds are on the left-hand side are usually lower than the right-hand side, which are the longer term bonds. And it slopes upward. But what we have right now is an inversion where shorter term rates are higher than longer term rates. And that is often considered signs of a recession coming. You know, we think this is one time where that's not going to be the case. Another signal of a possible recession is some declining negative data. And one of those data points is the Institute for Supply Management reports. The ISM, as it's referred to, publishes two surveys, a manufacturing survey and a services survey. And in the month of April, that reading on the manufacturing PMI was 47.1, and a reading below 50 is often considered recessionary. However, the services PMI had a reading of 53.6, up from 52.6 in March, so an actual improvement in the services PMI. So we have some conflicting data there. But another negative would be the Conference Board's leading economic indicators. That index fell by 1.2% in March. So we have some companies announcing layoffs right now, and mostly in the tech industry. So it's clearly indicating a slowdown But we still don't think that we're going to see a recession. And part of the reasoning behind that is every month the jobs report comes out, the government reports the monthly jobs gains, and those jobs have been growing pretty rapidly for some time now. And it doesn't seem to be letting up too much. Plus, wages have been increasing. It's really hard to see a recession if we're going to have jobs as strong as they are right now. Also, there's historic spending going on through the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Sciences Act that were recently passed by Congress and signed by the president. Now, both of these are inflationary because it's a lot of spending going into the economy. But with all that spending, it's very stimulative. So I don't see that. I see that as kind of a backdrop to a stronger economy than what many people see. So I think some of the economic data is bad, like the manufacturing PMI, but we have good data out there as well. So I think a mild recession is already priced into the market. As I mentioned earlier, that a lot of analysts think that we are going to see a recession. But if we do go into a mild recession, which we don't think is going to happen, I think there'll be little reaction by the market because it's already priced in. Where we would run into problems is if we get into a deep recession, then I think the market would react negatively. But we just don't see that happening at this time.
Great. Well, that's great news. So one of the things that we've learned is, we really want to be respectful of everyone's time. And so we really try to keep these calls to 30 minutes. So at this point, we're going to go ahead and we're going to open up. If there's anybody in the audience that has a question, there is a raise your hand button at the very bottom of your screen. You can go ahead and click that on, and I'll turn off your I'll unmute you. And we'll get you here to ask a question of Jim. But while we're waiting for that, one topic that seems to be pretty interesting out there right now is, Jim, while we're waiting for a question is, with the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, do you think that there is an underlying banking crisis and should be worried about a contagion spilling over into some of these regional or smaller banks?
No, I don't think there's a contagion that's going to happen. I think that these problems are isolated to a few banks, and it's not going to spread to across the regional banks. The regional banks have been punished recently, and their stock prices have been punished because of fears of this. But we're seeing some recovery now in the regional banks and their stock prices. And I really don't think that this is an issue. I think it's isolated to just a few banks that mismanage their balance sheets. And I think most banks are run fine and are not going to see those issues. So that's kind of where I'm thinking right okay. now.
Yeah, and that's been pretty consistent with our thoughts. Even when this whole issue started. So we have a question here from Mr. Arcara. Let me just unmute you, Frank. Frank, can we hear you?
Yeah, I got you, Mike.
Okay, fire away. Thank
you. Jim, appreciate your comments. And if this is redundant, I apologize. I'd have to step away for a quick call. But your outlook, I think I would agree with your sentiment in terms of the outlook domestically, but as we look to kind of more of a global perspective, what do you see out there that may give us pause for the positive outlook you portrayed in terms of, we continue to see the Ukraine situation continues to slog along with billions of dollars going to those efforts. Obviously, oil is always a big factor in terms of, economic growth. Kind of what are some things we should be aware of that may be out there from a global geopolitical perspective that could impact the position you're taking?
Yeah, actually, I'm seeing a lot of opportunity internationally. One of the things happening right now is the dollar has been declining, which is good for international investments. Inflation is not isolated to just the United States. It's global. So we're seeing it in other countries besides the United States. But I really see some opportunities overseas that primarily because of the falling dollar that I think, we did increase our international allocation at the beginning of the year for our clients. And that has worked out. That has been a good move so far. So I see that as I see a lot of positives there.
Great. Any other questions for Jim or myself or any of the our colleagues? No? Okay, everyone. Well, look, everybody at Malvern, thanks you for your business and your trust. As always, if you have any questions, never hesitate to reach out to us. And the best advice I'll give you is just turn off all of your newscasts, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC. I'm not beholden to either one of them, but you know, all they do is they're perpetuating fear and gloom and doom and fear sells. So everybody have a great day, great week. Enjoy your summer. And again, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Thank you all.